It's 7:41 and time for your KDNK local newscast for this Wednesday morning, December 21st. I'm Gavin Dahl, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. On the December edition of Get Connected, host Amy Barr spoke to Chaplain Sean Jung, bereavement coordinator for Home Care and Hospice of the Valley, about preparing to die.
What we witnessed over and over and over again in our work with hospice is that people die unprepared. The person doing the dying is unprepared. The family is unprepared, not just in the emotional sense, but in the business end of it. Nobody wants to look at it. Nobody wants to talk about it. I mean, there's so many reasons. One is the grief. We don't know what to do with grief. We are the most grief-avoidant culture on the planet because we don't know how to do it. We don't know how to mourn. We aren't taught by our family of origin how to do it well. And so we want to avoid talking about anything that might be connected to it.
In the old days, they were washed by the women. They were laid out in the home. We understood death. We buried our own, I guess, back in that generation, our grandparents did. It's pretty sterilized these days.
It is. We have nursing homes and hospitals. And now we're removed from the death. They may die at home, but then the funeral home comes and gets them, and then they bring you back a box of ashes. Or they may do a burial with a viewing. But we are pretty removed from it. And I think that there's some beauty and some healing and some completion in relationships with people who die when we stay more connected to that whole process from the moment of death until the cremains or the remains are finalized and done.
Well, you know, this is a holiday season, so I'm sure KDNK listeners are going, oh my gosh, what a downer of a discussion talking about death. But maybe we should look on this as the holiday present planning documents, materials, and books that you
I mentioned advance directives a minute ago. An advance directive is not a will. It is your directive for how you want to be treated should you have a sentinel event that doesn't take your life, but you're not able to talk. It's the thing that most people don't have.
So talk about some tools that we need in order to prepare. What should I have in place?
Well, you should have an advance directive, which names the person that you want to have speaking for you if you can't speak. And you have had the conversation with that person so that they know what you want. Do you want a feeding tube? Do you want artificial hydration? Do you want chest compressions if you have a heart attack? If you're going to have any kind of surgery, make sure you have an advance directive. But anybody over 18 should have one. It relieves your family of having to make the really hard decisions.
So where can you get an advance directive in order to fill out?
Your doctor's office. You can get them at any hospital. You can get them from attorneys, but you don't need an attorney. There's a booklet called Your Right to Make Healthcare Decisions. Hospice and home care all have them. Hospitals, nursing homes, doctor's offices have these. There's also a very well-known document called The Five Wishes. You make copies of these things, and then you hold on to the original. You do not lock it up. Don't put it in your safety deposit box. Don't hide it under your underwear. Put it where somebody can find it.
You can hear the entire interview on our website, kdnk.org. Click About, then Programs, and select Get Connected, and you'll see Sean Jung's smiling face. Becca Katz is co-coordinator for Get Outdoors Leadville. She stopped by the KDNK studio to tell us about the new funding they've secured and what they plan to do with it.
Get Outdoors Leadville is a project that's part of Great Outdoors Colorado, or GOCO's Inspire initiative, which is a statewide initiative that's meant to connect underserved youth and families with the outdoors. And our dream in Leadville, or the vision that our coalition, which is a very diverse coalition of people, it includes six Latina women who are our promotoras, and they conducted interviews in our outlying communities. We have six youth researchers who also conducted research among our youth. And then we had a ton of agency members, probably over 70 people involved actively in the initiative, who all formed the Get Outdoors Leadville Coalition. And we came up with this dream that because of the Inspire initiative, people would see Leadville and Lake County as a place where people came together and people of all ages, identities, and cultures came together to imagine a better world through connections to the outdoors and to each other.
What are some of the barriers to getting outside?
We found that there were really three bins of barriers. One of them is physical barriers. These are pretty obvious things. These are transportation barriers. Approximately 45% of our youth in Lake County live in outlying mobile home park communities. And so if you imagine these families, a lot of their parents who work not in Lake County, and so they travel to jobs outside of the county, which means that they're not around to drive their kids to programs that take place after school. And so once a kid gets home on the bus from school, there's no getting back into town where a lot of the programs are offered. And so that's a real example of a physical barrier. And there's also cultural barriers. There's a lot of perceptions in our society in general about who gets to play outside, who goes skiing, who goes biking. And it's really easy to view those places as only white spaces. And I think that's something that is a real cultural barrier.
And it's also been an issue like with the National Park Service, which has started to kind of revisit its own hiring practices because it has tended to be a very white and male organization.
Yeah, the National Park Service and the BLM and the Forest Service and any federal agency, you know, there's a lot of nationwide trends that we're dealing with where we're dealing with predominantly white males who are running those organizations. And if you're a visitor to those parks and you don't see yourself represented there, it's tough to envision why that would be a space that you would want to spend time. And so those cultural barriers are a really big deal. And then the last group seems related, but they're really social barriers. And this is kind of the barrier of sort of social cues. We have one project that we're trying to do through this initiative, which is putting up bilingual signs or symbol-based signage in our parks and outdoor play spaces to indicate that they're for everyone. There's a real perception that those spaces aren't meant for everyone. And so trying to create bilingual signage is really just to send a loud cue and overcome some of those social barriers. Another would be, so I work for Lake County Build a Generation, and Build a Generation has housed the Get Outdoors Leadville project for the last year during the planning phase. And Build a Generation has started working together with all kinds of local agencies to put together a flyer that's in both English and Spanish. And it goes out in the billing statements to one of our outlying mobile home park communities. And we're hoping to actually include that in all three of our outlying mobile home park communities. So that will be exciting.
So when the announcement was made recently that Great Outdoors Colorado would fund a range of new projects around the state, it was interesting to hear that part of the plan for that funding in Leadville is to build playgrounds at trailer parks. Can you talk about GoCo and how it will help your work?
Yeah, I mean, this was actually a really tricky spot because GoCo is interested in funding projects that are going to benefit the public good, but they also were really visionary in being interested in covering projects that truly did help overcome the real barriers that exist to underserved populations. And one of the barriers we identified was people say, if you can't bring Muhammad to the mountain, bring the mountain to Muhammad. And this is this idea of like, well, if we actually had inspiring outdoor play spaces right in people's backyards, then that's a really great opportunity. And GoCo has been really open-minded about working together with us, but it is a really creative partnership. What GoCo funds are actually going to be used for is funding what we're thinking of right now as being sort of a community build program. So take a youth core model, but make it like a family core model and have families actually in these communities helping build their own nature play yard. And then the funding for the actual play yard itself is actually coming from the mobile home park owners who we've been partnering with on this initiative. And all three outlying neighborhoods have indicated varying levels of interest so far, and we're still working together with them. Jordan O'Dell, who is the owner of Mountain View Village, which is where the majority of our outlying community is, he has already signed up to commit finances, as well as he just is excited about the initiative as a whole as a way to make life better for his residents.
For our KD&K listeners in Leadville, how can they get more involved?
If folks are interested in getting more involved, that's awesome, because we always need more people and we really want this to be a community-wide effort, and it really has been a huge community effort to date. I think the best method would be to drop by the Lake County Build a Generation office downtown on Harrison Avenue, right near Alpine Ski and Sport, and just checking in where things are going. We're in a sort of state of flux right now because we just got the implementation funds and we just finished our planning year. And Build a Generation's website is LC as in Lake County, BAG as in Build a Generation, so lcbag.org. Our phone number there is 719-486-4114.
Becca Katz, co-coordinator of Get Outdoors Leadville, thanks so much for stopping by KD&K.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Colorado's economy is starting to stabilize and showing signs of moderate growth, according to the latest economic forecast released Tuesday. Benta Berkland has more.
even though state lawmakers must plug a roughly $500 million budget shortfall next legislative session, the state's economy is improving. Natalie Mullis is the legislature's nonpartisan chief economist. She says the last few months have shown a mild turnaround.
We were concerned that some of the weakness in the industrial and energy sectors of our economy might be driving us into recession. Those things have improved, and so we're not as concerned about a recession now as we were then. We're more confident about our expectations for continued growth.
Mala says it'll still be a tough budget situation this year and for years to come. She attributes it to an aging population that spends less money, combined with growing costs for education and Medicaid. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
President-elect Donald Trump's position on renewables and clean energy worries environmentalists. But as Eric Gladys reports, a new poll says Republican voters strongly favor them.
President-elect Donald Trump's position on renewables and clean energy is worrying environmentalists, but according to a new national poll, his voters strongly favor them. The post-election survey found nearly 90% of all voters support more government action to speed up the shift to clean energy. Mark Pache with Conservative Energy Network says that includes 2-to-1 support by conservatives. He says the Republican Party shouldn't ignore these results.
For the GOP to be competitive in future elections, it must develop messages that have greater appeal to millennials, college-educated voters, minorities. Clean energy represents an opportunity to build a bridge while appealing to our conservative base.
Coal and oil companies have argued that policies supporting renewables will raise the cost of energy and hurt the economy, but the survey found conservatives favor those policies specifically because renewables are growing and rapidly adding jobs. Pollster Public Opinion Strategies talked to 1,000 U.S. voters. Donald Trump's selection of a climate skeptic to head the EPA suggests the incoming administration may try to undo President Obama's attempts to cut the carbon emissions that cause climate change. Pache says conservative groups are working to help transform the nation's energy supply, but they've been more focused on state and local policies. He says they will work in Washington.
Urge Congress and urge the Trump administration to take a proactive platform on clean energy, but most of the important work to move the ball is really happening at the state level.
Pache says the survey found clean air rules and support for economic development in energy transformation both tested off the charts. He says the poll found strong support for energy efficiency and far more negative opinions about coal and nuclear energy. Pache says the idea of government action aimed specifically at slowing climate change still is politically charged for conservatives, but he sees growing consensus on energy policies in general.
The encouraging part about the increase in support on the right is we hope that it can lead to a depoliticized policy environment where the accelerated growth of clean energy can thrive.
This is Eric Gladys reporting for KDNK.
On Monday, the board of directors at Aspen Valley Hospital voted not to participate in providing end-of-life options for those who are terminally ill. Proposition 106 was signed into law by Governor John Hickenlooper on Friday after receiving over 85% of the vote in Pitkin County. According to reporter Rick Carroll in the Aspen Times, the hospital's medical executive committee, the doctors, supported opting in. The hospital left open the possibility of opting in at a later date. Even if that happens in the future, individual physicians could opt out of assisting terminal patients if they request medication to end their lives, even though patients must self-administer the medication. A pipeline was found ruptured last week on U.S. Forest Service land in Bayfield near Durango. Produced water from coal bed methane that spilled into Sauls Creek is considered the largest toxic byproduct of oil and gas extraction operations. BP initially reported the creek was dry, but the next day a state oil and gas inspector found the creek contained runoff from snowmelt. As of this week, BP could not say how long the spill had been occurring, how much was released, or what the chemical makeup of the fluid was. There's still no explanation for the cause of the leak found in a 6-inch fiberglass gathering line. According to the Durango Herald, BP responded by closing the line, shutting down 17 wells, and constructing a temporary earthen dam. Trucks removed standing water in the creek bed, recovering 150 barrels, or 6,300 gallons of produced water mixed with snowmelt. BP has been responsible for 12 of the 19 reported spills in La Plata County in 2016. Glenwood Springs will expand the recycling facilities at the South Canyon landfill starting March 1st. The existing area for recycling newspapers, magazines, office paper, cardboard, glass, and aluminum will be expanded to handle drop-off. The final day of operations for the Recycle Center on School Street will be Saturday, February 25th, and then the bins will be relocated to South Canyon. Last year, voters approved the city of Glenwood trading the property near Glenwood Springs Elementary for land in the Confluence area near downtown. The school plans to expand, and the city wants to redevelop the Confluence area for residential housing.